So now it's recording.
It's recording.
We're here today with Chris Thomas, and we're going to talk a little bit about New Orleans. You know, I've had a lot of requests to talk a little bit about urban conditions in New Orleans from a sort of designer and a person who's interested in urban design point of view. But I've never been there, so I called up my friend Chris to talk a little bit about his experiences as a practicing architect in New Orleans.
Now let's see. Start off with I'm a graduate of Tulane University School of Architecture in 1980, and then I worked in New Orleans till 84 when I moved up here. My office was at the corner of Royal Street and Pirate Alley, overlooking the garden of the St. Louis Cathedral. It was the same building in which Tennessee Williams wrote the Glass Menagerie, and was next door to the house that William Faulkner lived in when he wrote his first novel. And it's interesting. I've been talking with a lot of my friends and colleagues from down there. And the kind of urbanistic interesting aspect of this is the areas that were settled first have come through without much harm happening to them. The French Quarter was unscathed. Uptown was basically never flooded. A good portion of Carrollton, I don't think, was a garden district.
And that has to do a lot with the fact that the places where people built first were the high
exactly,
ones.
You know, exactly.
I think it's interesting, and something I haven't heard mentioned a lot, is that New Orleans is one of the cities that has a history that's much longer and deeper than most places in the United States. I think of it, some places I've been to that are similar, like St. Augustine or Savannah or Charleston, where, you know, anything in the 20th century isn't really old. That things that are, you know, the 18th century, 17th century are old. And that's something that, you know, living in Chicago, anything from before, you know, 1940 is considered older than there isn't much of a history of the city left from before the Chicago Fire. So, you know, the whole sense of history there is almost more European than American.
Oh, it is. You do feel that. You feel that in the French Quarter, because other parts of the city that are old, such as Faubourg Marigny, which is on the downriver side of the French Quarter, is basically a 19th century area, early to mid 19th century. Even though it's a faubourg, you know, those are all wooden structures. But you know, that was less urbanized areas until the 19th century. You do have some 17th century, or I mean 18th century structures, I should say, that are in the French Quarter.
Yeah.
But you go the other side of Canal Street, then you're in what's called the American sector, which was, I believe, basically grew up, you know, in the decades before the Civil War. You know, it's interesting, my sister-in-law, her maiden name is Durell, and she is from New Orleans. Her family goes back a long, long ways. In fact, her mother's side of the family, their name is Martinez. It was originally Martinet because they were French, but then the French sold Louisiana to the Spanish, and they changed their names to Martinez. And then the French took it back, and they were so burned up at the French, they refused to change their names back.
So, in light of that sort of cultural history that the city has, I mean, it's obvious that it's not, I mean, it's going to change as a result of the hurricane, and different parts of it will have some kind of change, but having an idea of what that's going to be is strange. And you know, how the reconstruction happens, you know, I'm afraid of seeing, you know, large parts bulldozed, essentially, and that doesn't seem like it would be particularly beneficial, or maybe it is, I don't know.
I've been wondering about this a good bit myself. You may have read this month in Architectural Record, there were a number of reviews of various aspects of the Ground Zero redevelopment, Robert Campbell's scathing review of SOM's new design. And I've been talking with a lot of people about that, and one person made the comment that I think is very true, is that whole redevelopment was kind of set up to fail. from day one. You know, what are we doing building high-rise speculative office buildings on a site like that when we don't need the programmatic space to start off with?
And that's actually an argument I've made before. You know, something like a high-rise building happens almost entirely for economic purposes. Unless there's somebody leasing millions of square feet, they're not going to build millions of square feet. So what's more important on that side are the memorials, the transportation hub that Calatrava is doing, and things like that that are cultural in a more traditional sense than sort of functional office building.
Campbell's comment that what you're doing is you're, especially with a design like that, is you're showing the terrorists they want. They're making the kind of fortress design that it is. But what made me start thinking, I sure hope that no one gets a bright idea to go do that down in Louisiana.
Yeah, and that the level that design plays a role is very intriguing in that, you know, cities of history have, in most cases, evolved as opposed to been deliberately designed at one point. So there's something almost natural about the way that happens that can be entirely erased if it's done the wrong way. And that's one of the big flaws about the modernist movement's concepts of urbanism, is they wanted to clear blocks at a time and just build their new superstructures, and they were really, you know, insensitive to how people sort of behave and create relationships with each other and things like that. So I just want to see that that doesn't happen in New Orleans, but at the same time, if it goes to developer suburban, you know, that's a whole other problem that can happen, because there is a void between sort of business districts and suburbs that this is going to leave, and that's the kind of urban hole that is going to need to be filled in New Orleans.
And, you know, New Orleans never had very successful period of modern architecture. There were two or three interesting kind of visionaries that came from a modernist background and had this notion of a regionalist modernist architecture. People like Neil Nervas, John Lawrence, who was dean at the School of Architecture before I actually started there. And built some interesting, quirky, kind of environmentally friendly modern stuff. But it was so minor, the amount of stuff that they kind of built, that, you know, it's a flip on the screen. And most of the modern architecture that did get built in Louisiana is bad 50s and 60s international style, cheap aluminum curtain wall stuff. Until SOM got down there in the 1980s and started building Chicago-style high-rise office buildings with stone curtain walls on them. But most of the stuff that's of quality is of another era. And I think most of it that is of quality is probably still pretty much intact, because it is on higher ground, it is older. But, you know, areas like St. Bernard Parish, Chalmette, the areas around that, which are still being drained, I understand. All that was bad 50s and 60s suburbia that was built down there. And they may have to just tear it all down. It's a sad thing to say, but architecturally speaking, it won't be much of a loss.
It would seem that the first step of reconstruction should be to reinforce levees and increase the sort of defensive systems of the city to what they should be, which is in order to withstand a Category 5 hurricane. But it almost seems like they're talking more about just throwing up a bunch of cheap houses and getting everyone back in to look like heroes, as opposed to actually, you know, fixing some of the environmental regional problems.
I sure hope not, but, you know, all of the levees are completely governed by the Army Corps of Engineers. And with the modest knowledge of structures that I have, it just amazes me to think that anyone has ever been able to really do a calculation of the kind of loads that would happen on a levee in the middle of a Category 5 storm. I mean, how would you have any concept of what it would be? Certainly before computers happened, how would you have any concept?
The notion of just adding a few zeros behind the number just doesn't quite do it. You know, some of the stories that have come through in the kind of mainstream media about back in the day, you know, constables used to go and try and break the opposing neighborhood's levees so that their neighborhood didn't flood first. So they used to put National Guard on the levees to protect them from sheriffs from other areas of the city. It's just really interesting and tells a lot of sort of about the culture as well.
The real kind of, the tragic thing of all of it is, having lived there, it really is astounding, the percentage of New Orleans inhabitants that are just dirt poor.
And that's one thing that's been sort of exposed by this tragedy as well, is the levels of inequity. And one thing that I've been thinking and kind of wanting to mention is that it's not just in the South. Every critique I've seen that has to do with social inequity on the news is always followed by in the South, but I don't think that's true.
It's truer down there, but then
it's a little more obvious down there. Yeah,
there is a strange economic condition in Louisiana to start off with, New Orleans in particular. New Orleans has a kind of stratified culture. I would be willing to bet more than any other city in the United States. And it has to do with the Catholic Church. It has to do with race. And, after Brown versus the Board of Education, and desegregation set in, rather than kids going to public school, white kids going to public schools, basically every white kid was enrolled in a parochial school.
Right.
It's a huge parochial school system. And by and large, the public school system was left to the blacks. The aristocracy of New Orleans is kind of built around the same kind of thinking to this day. I mean, if you're a local New Orleanian who grew up in that kind of aristocracy, you can start doing things like, you know, joining a crew for Mardi Gras, going to the Mardi Gras balls. Get on a float in Mardi Gras, and also do business successfully. If you're an import from somewhere, you don't have a whole heck of a lot of chance. I have a good friend who's probably the most talented architect I've ever known, and he works down there, and has worked down there for 30 years. And, you know, keeping his practice going is always a struggle for him. He does beautiful work. And he's done some significant work down there. But if he'd been born down there, he'd have a huge architectural office.
Have you been in contact with him?
Yes, I have.
Good.
He evacuated to Alexandria. Then left there and went to visit his sister in Salt Lake City. So hopefully he thinks he'll be back in the next 2 weeks.
Is his office in the Central Business District?
Or? Actually, right on the edge of the quarter in the old Jack's Brewery building, or a portion of the Jack's Brewery building. And so what status that's in? Has it been looted or anything like that? Lord only knows.
Yeah, I agree. Only wonder if, you know, just having computers in it, if it's an architecture office, that would make it a target to a certain extent.
They're old-fashioned architects. They think the hard drive's where you store beer.
The little thing that comes out is where your coffee cup.
Yeah, exactly. every time I go down to New Orleans, you really, especially not having lived there for a while, it really hits you what a different environment than any other city in the United States it is. You do feel like you have entered a different country.
Since the oldest parts of the city seem to be fairly unscathed, I suppose that will continue to a certain extent. The tourism will certainly come back, and that won't go away.
French Quarter is opening this weekend. You're letting people back in. Hotels are opening up. I imagine most of their business will be relief workers at this point.
And that's not bad either, you know. That's a source of people that need to let off steam.
But, you know, the other aspect is, it's just, you know, the Port of New Orleans is one of the biggest ports in the United States. At one time, it was the biggest port in the United States. And so you wonder, with a capacity for commerce that it has, why is it so poor? Yeah. And the only thing that occurs to me that, you know, when I lived down there, they still had the same kind of banking regulations that they'd had since, I think, long before the Depression, and there was no inter-parish banking allowed. Basically, if there was a bank, its headquarters was its only branch. And supposedly the reason behind that was, there was a local bank used by most of the aristocracy down there. The Whitney Bank still exists to this day. And it was done to make it so that the Whitney didn't control all of the capital in the state. But I think what it succeeded in doing is making it so that no institution can garner enough capital to really develop anything. Maybe that's to its advantage. The fact that it's such a backwater is probably why most of the architecture is still there.
Preservation through lack of progress?
You know, that may just be it.
Yeah, and progress has certainly done its share of damage.
It's certainly not out of sensitivity. I mean,
and you know, it's one of the few, well, I should say, regions maybe in the U.S. that has its own specific architectures as
right,
well.
Right.
The notion of the sort of wraparound porch and shotgun house, like dwelling unit, although my condominium is sure very shotgun-like.
There are lots of architectural permutations and styles that exist down there that have been New Orleanized over time.
And a lot of that is in direct response to heat and humidity. Which is really what air conditioning does, is it removes these regional characteristics that architecture has to take on to make the buildings livable. It's not a concern anymore. You just wire it up to some technology and there you go.
Well, to some extent, it was financial too, although they were part and parcel to each other. Now, shotguns exist to a great extent because property was taxed by the frontage foot.
So they made very, very narrow
plots. Right. Then they also taxed them based upon how many stories they were. So that developed an architectural style called the camelback, which is a regular shotgun in the front and two stories in the back.
It's really interesting to see how sort of politics like that governs the form of buildings.
Well, it's not unlike Chicago when, I'm not sure it was the 20s or 30s or 40s, when the city council decided to start taxing or charging rent to buildings whose cornices overhang the street.
And so
they all went away.
Yep, a business. Actually, I had heard that the business that removed cornices was actually the owner, was related to the mayor at the time or something like that.
Interesting. Wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah. But now, you know, since that scene is historic and it is more interesting on a building than not having it, and, you know, there's places in the city now in Chicago where there's just like a concrete block wall where there used to be a cornice, you know, but they're often coming back and putting those back onto the buildings.
Marquette Building, they did that.
Yeah.
Which is where our office is.
What other New Orleans anecdotes or stories you have?
Well, I can tell you, my brother lives in Baton Rouge, and as I mentioned, my sister-in-law lives in, is from New Orleans, and her brother and his wife, who are also from New Orleans, longtime residents, live just down the street from them. And just before the hurricane, they went down to get her her father and mother and grandmother and to evacuate them. Well, her father had just had back surgery. They were living in Slidell. And so they wouldn't let him out of the hospital. And so her mother stayed with him in the hospital. And they came through just fine. And they took my brother's brother-in-law and his wife took her grandmother up to their house in Baton Rouge. And the morning after the hurricane, they went in to wake her up and she died. And there was no power, no phone. Fortunately, he's a doctor, so he probably knew what to do. I'm not sure what you do, but...
Was it natural causes?
Yes, it was not unexpected, just not timely. I've heard lots of stories of friends, and I can't imagine what it would be like to not evacuate, why you would not do it. But people who escaped... One person I know escaped... had to go up into the attic because the floodwaters were going and would have drowned except that a tree had fallen on the roof and created a hole, so they were able to get out up on the roof. You know, like I said, I lived there from 75 to 84. There was not one hurricane approached New Orleans in that entire period of time.
The Gulf of Mexico, I think, is 4 degrees warmer than average. And apparently that's all it takes.
Yep.
It's just 4 degrees to fuel something like a hurricane going from, you know, maybe, I don't know what it would have been otherwise, but up to Category 5. It's a surprising testament to the power of changes the environment.
Yes, indeed. And I guess there's this whole new theory that these things cluster together, too. So I would have this kind of grouping of hurricanes over the past few years.
Yeah, I think there was, I don't remember where I heard it, but it was 30-year cycles that slows down for 30 years and then it'll be worse for 30 years, but we're just entering that 30-year period right now, which means that potentially they're going to continue to worsen.
Yeah, the last big one was Betsy, which was 20 days off of being 40 years, the spacing between the, and Betsy did, you know, almost the exact same thing. It flooded Chalmette. I know that because my oldest friend grew up in Chalmette, and he says there's 8 feet of water there now. There was 8 feet of water then.
And buildings were still in existence. I mean, it wasn't that they bulldozed the whole neighborhood and started over at that point.
No, and you know, a lot of... The reconstruction effort, I think, in New Orleans is not going to take the length of time one might think, simply because there's not the infrastructure issue that you have to build things around here. There's nothing below ground. There are no basements.
Yep.
Everything has to be above ground, simply because you're sitting on ground that's the consistency of coffee grounds.
And maybe one thing that has changed that... certainly beyond my knowledge, is the level of contamination in the overall soil that all got sloshed around. I had heard that there was a Superfund site in downtown New Orleans that when that gets flooded, it spreads the contaminants from that site all through the water, which is far above and beyond sort of the biological issues and things like that. It's actual dangerous chemicals and things.
I guess one hopeful thought is maybe it disperses it enough so that it becomes less of a problem.
Washes it all out into the Gulf. We're just
eating
contaminated shrimp.
Cleaning.
Yeah.
It is hard to imagine how humid it really is in New Orleans.
In Chicago, being next to the lake, people often complain how humid it is here. And I moved up here from Central Florida.
Yeah.
And so when I moved up here, I was like, wow, this low humidity is great. And I turn around, and the person next to me is complaining about how humid it is.
But in Florida, you even see it there. I mean, things aren't as old, but everything has stuff growing on it. You know, there's mold on everything. You know, all wood surfaces.
And all the new houses are made entirely out of vinyl because you can just pressure wash it off.
That's right. There was a great old architect, Nathaniel Cortland Curtis, and he wrote a book on the history of New Orleans architecture, probably back in the 20s, and he made the remark about the shutters on windows in New Orleans, which were kind of a greenish blue. And for some reason, they all got painted the same color. Maybe it was the manufacturer, but because of the climate, because of the humidity, and because they baked in the sun and all that, that you could look at that color and you could see blue, you could see green, just all these, a little bit of red, kind of all mottled with the same thing.
And I'm sure since then they've all been painted different colors. So.
That's right. And you can see, last time I was down there, you can still see a lot of it with that same color.
One of those things that you'd never really know unless you really been there and experienced.
It's real interesting, too. What you should do is you should go down to New Orleans, experience New Orleans, and then drive up River Road. River Road is along the Mississippi. And take it all the way up to Natchez, because then you can experience the different qualities of the Mississippi River. And the Mississippi River is just, to me, the most amazing natural feature I have ever seen. It is so immense and so powerful. When you're going up River Road most of the way, you know, till past Baton Rouge somewhere, there's this 20-foot construct of the levee there, and you can see tall ships. You see them going on the other side of this, but you have no sense that there's water over there because you can never see it.
Yeah, and you say tall ships, you mean like shipping vessels?
Yeah,
very large.
Yeah,
and
freight.
Seeing one moving from a distance is amazing. They're very large buildings that float. They're really remarkable. And I know when I lived in Savannah, Georgia, you used to see that once in a while. That you'd look at the skyline and see a building and realize that it was moving. And it wasn't a building that's normally there. It's actually just a ship going up the river to the port.
I
lived in Savannah for like 3 or 4 years.
Oh, I love Savannah.
Yeah, it's a remarkable city. And I think it shares a lot of the things we mentioned before in terms of sort of culture and discrimination.
It's interesting. I went there over Christmas. And it's the first city I've been in that reminded me. That and Charleston, which I saw on the same trip, both of them reminded me of New Orleans.
Yeah.
Different, but just same kind of things contributed to them being there and being that way.
Next time you go to Charleston, look for the Middleton Inn, which is actually on a state outside of Charleston, but it's a modern building that is just really spectacular. It's one of the best pure modern contemporary buildings that I've actually seen.
Who did it?
I have to look it up and get back to you because I haven't thought about it for years. I might have to go and edit this whole thing out if I'm completely wrong. And there'll be this displaced name of the architect
that's
in this place.
That's right.
Well, I guess that's really about it. If there's any last things you want to say, I'm pushing 33 minutes here. That's about as long as I usually go.
I think that will do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can hit the off button there.
All right. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. And I'm sure my listeners do as well.
Thank you for listening. This has been Kevin Schellenbach with Architecture Talk and my special guest, Christopher Thomas. Please leave any comments at archtalk@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.